If you're doing it because society tells you that you need to be a small business owner and you're doing it for the clout and that's the only reason you started, you gotta seriously look in the mirror and wonder if, you know, are you doing it for everybody else's sake or your own?
Do you feel you should be further along in your contracting business? Are you tired of not making the money that you know that you're worth? Or maybe you're winning, but you just want to win at a higher level. I'm Tom Reber, and this is the Contractor Fight. Turn this shit up and get ready to earn more respect, earn more money, and be a better leader in your business. Oh, and P.S., this show is not for thin-skinned people. If you offend easily or have a victim mentality, you should probably just move the fuck on right now. Let's go. All right, guys, today on the Contractor Fight podcast, I get to interview the host of the Tools of the Trade podcast, Colin Toop. And what's pretty cool, on his website, you'll find an old African proverb that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I really, that's really kind of what we're talking about here today, is how we all belong to a great industry. The trades are a great place to build a career, build a life and stuff like that. And Colin really takes us, we have a couple different topics that we talked on here today. And one of them was just things he's learned from being a foreman as an electrician, to running a business, to now a project manager for a really large company, talking about a lot of the opportunities that he's had because of the trades, and some other advice to help build unity and build teams so that you can go farther together with the people in your company. So anyway, I appreciated hanging out here with Colin. Make sure you guys hit the show notes, check out his podcast and all that other stuff. And without any more me running my mouth with useless shit, here's Colin.
What's up, man? How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Hey, it's good to have you on. I was recently did an interview with you.
Yeah.
And your podcast, which is called Tools of the Trade. It's a great show. You interview a bunch of people over there, man. And after chatting with you for a while, I was like, man, this is a guy we got to get on the fight here. Because you've been, what'd you start as an electrician, I think you said?
Yeah, I've been... Been an electrician for 14 years now. And although I'm not on the tools anymore, so to speak, I'm in a management role. So I've seen everything from being in the trenches to being a foreman, having my own business, and now project manager for large vertical construction. So I've had my hands in a lot of different aspects of the trade for sure.
Cool. Well, I know we're going to get into that a little bit, but what I'd like to do is I'd like to give you some have you do a little plug for your podcast here, man, before we get into stuff. So what's the show about? What kind of things do you cover on there and Tools of the Trade podcast? You know, give us a little insight into that if somebody hasn't heard of your show before.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So the Tools of the Trade, it really came from a place of darkness, to be honest. When I had my small business, a small electrical contracting company in Vancouver, I was going through some hard times, like in the startup phase where things just weren't going our way. And I wanted to hear stories from those people that were in the trenches or the people that have gone through the shit, so to speak, and have now made it out the other end. And they're either VPs or CEOs and they've got these big organizations, or other people that were similar size to me that were going through it currently. And I wanted to learn from them. And I just couldn't find what I was looking for back then. So I kind of parked that idea and I said, you know, maybe one day somebody's going to create this and I'm going to listen and I'm going to enjoy it. And obviously when I had my business, I was going pretty full tilt. So there wasn't any time to take on anything outside of the business itself until I made a decision in my life with my wife to move from Vancouver to Toronto, where I live now, and sell off the shares of my business to explore some opportunities that I hadn't explored before in my life, take a kind of a pivot in my career. And when I came to Toronto and I started working for somebody else, I got a bit of free time. And I said, you know, I'm a curious guy anyways. I talk about two people in construction about construction all the time. why wouldn't I record it and try and pass that knowledge on to others in the industry to give back? Because as you know, and anybody listening probably knows, there's a huge lack of resources and development and things in our industry for people to hold on to. There's a lack of leaders like yourself. There's a lack of people to look up to in the industry. Like you look at tech, you could think of like Zuckerberg or any of these other guys that are billionaires. But what about the billion-dollar construction companies? Who's talking to those guys? Nobody.
Right. So what have been some of the themes that you've seen as you've been interviewing people and having conversations? Like what are some things that just jump out at you as maybe common good things, common issues, or maybe things that might have surprised you?
Yeah, there's so much, man. I've been drawing a lot of parallels between things and really thinking back as to what I've learned kind of in the last 30 episodes. And I'd say when it comes to small business owners, the ones that really seem to be the most successful are the ones that live and die by their ethics. They're the highly ethical people that put their clients and their projects and their people before the profit of the business, or I guess personal profit, I should say. So they're really taking care of the ethics in their company. And that seems to come through quite often as a recurring theme is ethics outweigh everything if you want to have a long-term successful business. Some of the other things that I like to ask people about, which turns into a recurring theme, is why people like the industry, why people like construction, what their favorite part about it is. And a lot of people that I've talked to that found their way into construction in a roundabout way, they never knew how much diversity was actually inside construction itself. Like it's not just, a lot of people I've talked to thought initially that construction was just working and building with your hands. They didn't realize that there's directors, VPs, managers, CEOs, business development personnel, just everybody can be in construction. And when people find that there's that much available and it's super dynamic and fun and the people are different than your typical white collar workers, they seem to fall in love with the trade. So those are two things that I'm noticing a lot. As well as just the simple fact that there is a labor shortage and that we do need to get more young people interested in the skilled trades by being those leaders in the industry. All of us, yourself, myself, anybody else listening, take somebody under your wing as a leader and try and influence somebody in your community to join the skilled trades, to join construction, because we need it right now.
Yeah, we really do. In fact, shoot, all the days are running together now. What did I just do? So yeah, in our 100K contractor group is a coaching group that we have here. Our June 2020 theme is all about hiring. Yeah. And I was putting some notes and some of the content together and some things like that. And one of the things that I had shared in this document that we're giving out is that we're in a situation in the trades where, you know, I think schools like high schools and stuff like that are doing a pretty piss poor job of making the trades a viable option for people and making it attractive. You know, I think, you know, the message has been sent for at least all of my lifetime. You know, I'm 50 and I at least 40 years that you got to go to college to be successful. And I don't agree with that. You know, I think college is of great value if you know what you want to do and some things like that. But when I look at the debt issues and all that other shit, and then I also think as contractors, we don't make the trades attractive either because we don't run our businesses well, right? We don't make money. I did everything in my power to not be in the trades when I was growing up because I looked at my family members who were in the trades. My dad was one of them. He was always dirty. He was tired and never had a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so like, why the hell would we want to go do that? So I think there's a huge responsibility to show younger people that this is pretty cool shit that we get to do. And so if somebody doesn't want to be cooped up inside, you know, they want to be creative. They want to work with their hands. They want to do crazy stuff with math and numbers with their brains. I mean, there's always a place for somebody in the construction industry. So
yeah, you got that right. Now I'm not sure what's going on down in the States with you guys, but we're seeing in a lot of provinces here that the budget cuts for public education in high schools is causing a lot of the woodworking and metal classes and welding classes and stuff like that to actually decrease in size or completely disappear out of these schools. So how is somebody supposed to get interested? You know, like they're taking away music, they're taking away art, they're taking away construction and metal shop and woodwork. And like, what's really left? Like those are the Yep. I don't know why you would take that out of the school. That's where you can really show your creativity. And I think if we're going to take that away, there's a problem there. There's a huge disconnect.
Yeah, I would agree. And we've seen it a lot. I grew up and there was auto shop, there was wood shop, there was, you know, all those programs, and now they're, you know, like you said, they're disappearing. But all right. So I know you and I had sent back and forth here a couple bullet point, just things of maybe some topics that we want to camp on here for a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I guess right out of the gate, I'll kick it off with the one that intrigues me the most.
Okay.
And then I'll let you take it from there. The one topic I really wanted to dig into is what you've talked about, your progression and what you've learned from being a foreman to a small business owner and now a project manager for a larger company. And because, you know, we talked off air a while back, you've got some pretty crazy insights and lessons and things like that that you've learned. And I thought it would be good to kind of share some of those.
Yeah, sounds good. So I'll give people a bit more context. When I became an apprentice electrician, I started off with an industrial company in Vancouver. And they had brought me in and they said, you know, there's maybe 2 months of work left at this job, but if you want to get signed up and registered under a company so that your next position is easier to fill, we'll take you on and, you know, you can pull some wire for us. And it was a massive water filtration facility they were building. And I guess for whatever reason, my work ethic shone through and they saw something in me and they said, hey man, you want to travel with us across the country? Hmm. And I'm 19. And I said, absolutely. Hell yeah. Of course. Like, you're going to pay for me to travel across the country. You're going to give me an allowance. You're going to put me up in a house and I get to work and I get to see a new place. Like, why wouldn't I be all over that?
Right.
So I took that opportunity and I never looked back, and I kind of traveled from BC to Alberta to Saskatchewan to all the way to Ottawa, and spent about 3 years doing that. And then when I needed to come back to school, I believe it was for my third year, I came back and said, you know, I've seen a lot of this industrial stuff. I want to diversify and I need to understand what's going on inside of a small commercial project or residential home, because I wanted to be well-rounded. I didn't want my buddies to call me and say, hey, can you come fix my panel or something at home? Yeah. And I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So I came back, finished school, worked for a couple small outfits in Vancouver until I got my ticket. And then when I got my ticket, oil and gas was just going nuts in Alberta. So I decided to get on what people would call like a FIFO or a fly in, fly out position. And I was doing some crazy shifts, like 30 days on, 3 days off up north on the oil and gas. I had some great shifts, like 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. And I got to see what Northern Canada was all about, what the oil and gas jobs were looking like. Hmm. And then the next step that I kind of took from there was, because I had always been a technician, I'd never really been a leader. The most I had ever seen in the field was probably being a lead hand, which is kind of like a foreman's assistant. So when I left, there was an opportunity that kicked up in Saskatoon, in Saskatchewan, in Canada here. And that was for the largest potash mine that we had going at the time. And they were doing this big expansion project. And I went down there and I got a foreman position kind of right off the bat. And I started leading a crew of about, I think, 23 guys that we had going on night shifts. So we were working 5 p.m. till 5 a.m., 12-hour shifts. And I got kind of tried my hand at managing guys that were a lot older than me for the first time in my life. And that was quite an awesome experience. And then once that project kind of started to wind down, I looked at one of my buddies that I was working with and we said, you know, we've been decided that we wanted to do this so long ago. And now we have the capital. Let's take a vacation, come back, and we'll start a company. And that's exactly what we did. So when we came back from that job, we went to Thailand for about a month and a half, tore it up, had a great time, traveled, saw a lot of stuff. When we came back to Vancouver, we started a company and that lasted about 5 years. But what I started to notice through all my experience was I had always gone and I've always been somebody that wanted to seek more opportunity. Like, what do I want to spend the next couple of years of my life actually learning and doing? Yeah. And when I had the small business, I realized that it's probably not going to pay me what I want in the beginning, and it's going to take a while to get there. You know, it's tough having a business partner, and there's a lot of things that I haven't done yet that I don't think that I want to learn the hard way. I want to go and learn them myself. And one of those was being a PM. I'd never been on super large multi-million dollar government and public private partnership projects as a PM. I'd never managed anything that large. So I said, man, I got to get this opportunity. So that's how I came back here or got here in Toronto with my wife. And so, you know, I keep thinking back and like, what have I learned? What have been the similarities and differences? And one thing that I learned for sure was that, you know, construction had given me the opportunity to see my entire country. I didn't have to take a sabbatical and hop in an RV and drive it. I got to hop in my car and get paid to travel across the country to see all of how everybody lives, how everybody works. I got to meet people from every single province and down in the States. We had guys from the US up here as well. And I got to do it. Like I got paid to do that. And I got paid to go to school. And everywhere I've turned, I've been, somebody's kind of said, I'm going to pay you to come here. I'm going to, you know, come to my province, come work on my project. And I just, there's so much opportunity for that in trades, because you can literally take your ticket, go right across the country, or you can go to any British Commonwealth country like Australia, US, and you could go get a job and you can be making a six-figure salary if you are, if you have enough experience. So, you know, I didn't need a crazy education, although I've always educated myself. That's just who I am. And that's my personal choice. I didn't have any student loans or any debt. I was able to learn all of these different micro cultures within the Canadian country itself. I got to travel and see everything and get paid to do it. And so I keep looking back and saying that I don't think that I would have had the opportunities I had to meet the people I met, to make the money I made, and to see my country if it wasn't for construction itself. And, you know, being an electrician was my personal choice. I do love the trade itself. But just construction has provided me with that opportunity. And if anybody's listening that's not sure which way they want to go in their lives, I think construction is probably one of the most viable options if you want to go see things and get paid to do it and not be in debt, you know?
Yeah. So you own a business for what, 5 years?
Yes.
And pros and cons of owning it versus what you're doing now?
Man, the pros is being able to go out and tell people that you're a business owner. I think nothing else jacks your ego up more than that, right? Like you're at a bar and a girl asks you what you do. You say, I own a business. Like you feel good about it.
Yeah.
You know, being thrown in the deep end of small business ownership when you don't have any experience is the best. What do they call it? What do they call those things? They're like an MBA, except you're not going to business school. So they call them alternative MBAs. That's what it is. So basically learning accounting, learning bookkeeping, learning profit and loss and balance sheets, learning about budgets and numbers, understanding how a business works from the back end, from the ownership side, has provided me with a foundation that I was able to actually take and go to these businesses that I've worked for since then and said, you know, I'm not just another kid here that wants to be a PM or wants to lead jobs for you. Like I've ran a business and I left. It was my choice. It wasn't that it failed. It's that I decided to leave for better opportunities. I'm bringing you the CEO mindset to come manage your job for you. So that was another pro, was being able to take that. The cons was definitely a lot of the things that people would think about small business ownership, especially construction. You don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. And when you get into construction for the first time, when you get into business for the first time, you win a few jobs and you're out there banging them out and everything seems good and you're putting all of that cash in your pocket. And then all of a sudden you scale. Yeah. And we reached this point where we were getting thirsty. And we went from, I think, $300,000 or $400,000 in annual revenue to about 1.5 in less than a year. Mm-hmm. And that amount of scale, obviously we had to crew up like three or four times what we had. And that required us to hire off the street and make a bunch of overhead expenditures, such as vehicles and tools, to people that we didn't know that well. Right. And I would say that although it was probably the most rewarding experience to own a small business, it was the most stressful time in my life. There was some, you know, I was on the brink of breakdowns here and there just because of how much we wanted to grow, how fast it was happening.
Right.
And we didn't have the structure in place to handle it. And we wanted, you know, on the surface, you want that speed and that growth, but it'll take a toll on you. And I don't think it's worth it in the long run. And probably to cap it off, the hardest part was the mental struggle, the mental shit that I had to go through when I decided I wanted to change things up in my life and that I, you know, I was going to park the business owner thing for a little while, was coming to terms with the fact that I'm not failing and leaving. I'm making a conscious decision to go and chase my dreams in another area of my life. And a lot of people will come up to me like, dude, how does it feel to fail? Or how does it feel that you know, you're letting all these people down and, you know, you're exiting and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, at first I felt bad. I was like, you know, this sucks, man. Like, it feels like I'm a failure.
Yeah.
But when I thought about it, I was like, no, like, I'm making this decision myself for something that matters to me. And I think if anybody's out there listening and they feel trapped, like, you're not trapped. You can make your own decision to leave, to stay, to grow, to scale, to stay at whatever size you're at, or to, you know, do what I did and go from business ownership to being back working for somebody else. And I think when I came to terms with that decision being in my court, it really helped me get over the fact that it wasn't a failure.
You know, that's big. I've talked here a lot that, you know, for various reasons, I believe a lot of contractors should not be in business for themselves. Okay. And I think, you know, it's easy to look at the stuff like, oh, you haven't figured out how to run the money and you're in debt and, you know, you haven't turned it around and it's been so many years and this. I'm not even talking to that. I'm talking like, sounds like you've had a lot of clarity around what success means to you, what happiness means to you. And you made a decision that, you know, I would rather pursue some other things in my life and live now instead of just, you know, putting my nose down and building this big ass company right now. And I think I want to make it clear to people that that's okay. Like, it's, yeah. And another thing that you touched on earlier was you came to these other companies having owned a business. It was funny. You were talking about the education, the MBA or whatever you're talking about. And I'm like, yeah, you get to get this education, but it's with your real money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like in a textbook where, you know, Billy sold a job for this and blah, blah,
exactly.
blah. You know, it's like, this is your real fucking money, man. So, but one of the things that I've noticed, and I get the sense from you, is somebody like you who's owned a business is such a value to another business owner because you've been there. It's a, you understand some of the things that keep them up at night. And what I've seen, guys like you that go work for another company, you almost bring a gratitude with you that you don't have to wear all the hats right now and you could just do one thing and do it really well. Like I see with buddies of mine that were head football coaches and they resigned or got fired or whatever, and they got another job on somebody else's staff just as like a position coach or something. You know what I mean? And it was and I've had a few of those guys on my staff and they're great because they know what the HC is dealing with. They know the struggles. They know all the parent shit you got to go through and all this administrative stuff. And so what they do really well, the good ones, is they go, what do you want me to do? And I'm going to do it like a total FW here. And you'll never have to worry about my position group being ready. And that takes so much weight off of you as a coach. And the same thing with a business owner. You have somebody like you that comes in, you're given this one role and you go, I'm going to knock this shit out of the park and do my one thing. Cause compared to running a business, this role's like pretty easy now in some ways. Does that make sense?
That's exactly it. Like you get to focus on that one thing instead of wearing all the hats. And you're right. Like you do come in at it with the sort of gratitude. You understand what the owner's going through. You're able to speak his language. You know what his stresses are and, you're able to pick up where his weaknesses are and try and help out. And when you get to focus on that one thing, like it's really that sense of freedom. Like I have to go there. My job is to crush it at this one position. And then I can leave and I have my evenings to myself. And although, you know, I wear all the hats in my podcast, which I treat like a business and I got lots of other things going on in my personal life. It's very nice to be able to just focus at work without being super distracted because you know what you're doing every day.
When I sold my half of a business many years ago, I went from owner to I jumped in for, I don't know, a few months during the transition to just being a sales guy. and I was like, wow, this is kind of easy. Like, you know, this is all I have to do is sell shit. Like it was pretty nice. So,
yeah.
So, and I bring this up because I want to encourage anyone who's listening right now, who owns a business now, if you're grinding and it's burning your ass out and you're not fulfilled and you're not happy, something's got to give. And sometimes that give is it's okay to just say, hey, I'm done. I'm done for now. And maybe you might have plans to start another business someday. I don't know. You may or may not, you know what I mean? But it's, if we're not taking care of our families, if we're not making the money we want to make, if we're going into debt, if we're all these stresses and you're up at late at night, you're blowing off exercise, you're not taking care of yourself, and you're carrying all this, that is not a good life. So that's where I want to encourage people, like, don't feel, because I've felt this way in the past, like if I didn't, because I've had several businesses and I've shut some down and some failed, some succeeded and all this other stuff. And a couple times I've done the intentional strategic shutdown, just going, this is just not what I want. You know, it doesn't fire me up. It does whatever. It's not fulfilling me. And I had to work through a little guilt, like, oh, people are going to think that I failed, you know, yeah, 'cause I didn't do this or whatever it is. When, you know, you talk to some of the most successful entrepreneurs, they have a pile of what would be deemed failures in business. But I think we learn lessons through all of them. You know, yeah, some of those I shut down because I didn't start right. I didn't kick it off right. And I started them for the wrong reasons and things. I mean, there's so many different reasons that we do this shit, but I just want to encourage somebody, if you're listening to this and you're like on the bubble, you know, sometimes you just need a break. Sometimes you need to get away from running a business, you need to enjoy your life. It depends how old your kids are. I mean, there's so many factors here that we could go on, but
yeah. Anyway, and I think just to underscore one other thing here is, if you're doing it because society tells you that you need to be a small business owner and you're doing it for the clout and that's the only reason you started, you gotta seriously look in the mirror and wonder if, you know, are you doing it for everybody else's sake or your own? And if it's not for your own, then, you know, you're going to live a pretty miserable existence trying to keep up with that.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you wish, you know, you're an employee now. Okay. And
yeah,
you work for some other companies and things like that. As an employee, what do you wish more business owners knew or understood or paid attention to when it comes to their teams?
I think, you know, there's a couple things. I think it depends on the size of the organization. I work for a pretty large organization now, so it's tough to get, you know, to get line of sight into a lot of things because there's a lot of bureaucracy and red tape. Mm-hmm. But if we're talking to like the, you know, the mid-sized business owner that probably has a more tight-knit relationship with their people, I think it's very important. One thing I noticed that the good leaders in my business, the business I work for, do is they're really good at checking in and asking, are you good? Is everything good? They're leaving the floor open to you to say whether things are going well for you or not. And I think maybe it may be to not be surprised one day when you come and say, I'm not happy. They're constantly asking you and giving you the chance to bring it out and say, yeah, actually, you know what? I feel like shit right now. I think that I'm overloaded. I need help and I'm not getting it from you guys. What are you going to do about it? They're leaving that floor open. I think another thing as an employee is, so first, like, the transparency is huge. Like, if you're able to have a direct relationship with the people in your business as the owner and you support them, and you're true to your word. The best people that I've ever worked for have, obviously there's contracts involved when you sign up with a company, but
yep,
the best ones I've worked for have literally looked me in the eye and said, outside of the contract, I promise you this is going to happen while you work here. And those people that have come back and said, see, I told you, I promised, and they've delivered on their promises. They've really taken care and they listen for your feedback. They engage you in decisions and they don't run it with a big head saying it's my way or the highway. They're like, you know, when we tell you go, you're going to go hard. You're going to go fast. You're going to do it your way. As long as you fall within these KPIs, you're meeting the metrics, we expect you to develop and expand and grow. So I think that's very important. And I think as well is to make sure, if you are bringing junior members into your business, myself, I've been in the industry for 14 years, but I was never a PM before. And there's a lot of stuff that has to get done a certain way in a large organization as a PM. And I was partnered with, in our company is the best PM that we have. He's one of the best. And they put me with him and they said, we know that you have the potential to do all these great things in your career. We want you to learn how to be a PM from the best we have to offer in our organization. So what we're going to do is we're going to put you on this massive project. We're going to put you directly paired up with this guy. And your job is to soak all of that knowledge in and learn to do it the way he does. And he's taken me right under his wing and shown me the path. And I think it's not necessarily up to the owner to train the people, but it's if you can pair those further ahead in your organization with those that are coming up, and you can have that real mentorship relationship and get people, you know, one of the things that I talked about previously was the issues with all of these meme accounts and everybody's, you know, talking shit about apprentices and saying, you know, oh, the face on the apprentice when he comes back from the van with the wrong part. And they, you know, everybody's right. talking smack. The people losing there are the leaders.
Yeah.
Because the foreman, the people that are in charge of your crew, if your crew is a machine and that apprentice is part of that machine that's getting the job done, and you're just going to ride him and treat him like shit and yell at him all day, when you turn your back, he's going to slack off. Right. And so if you are able to have that strong mentorship relationship, and I think organizations need to instill that in their culture. It's like, this is what we do here. You take the people below you and you pull them up to your level, and there's going to be somebody above you that's going to be pulling you up to theirs. So there's this constant growth. Everybody's trying to grow. And if you don't want to, you want to stay at that one position, then do it really well. You know, that's fine. Not everybody yeah. needs to grow into a leadership position. I understand that's not for everybody. And I think that that's very important. It's just involve your people, make sure you mentor them, and make sure that they can grow within your organization and that they're involved in the decision-making process.
All right, fighters, $100,000 a year is not too much to ask. Listen, when our parents were younger, 100 grand was a lot of money. When I was growing up, 100 grand was a lot of money. Today, it's barely enough to get by in America, especially if you're a business owner. You got a lot of responsibilities. Everyone's got a handout, man. You got your subs, your employees, your vendors, your customers, your family, the doctor, your lawyer, the IRS, the state. Everybody wants a piece of the damn action. And quite frankly, the bills are never going to stop. Okay. Sadly, most contractors just think, I got to work harder and harder and harder and harder to make more money. Yet you're putting in all this time, putting in all this effort, and you're wondering, why am I still at 50, 60, 75 grand a year when I'm working my ass off? Listen, that's where I wanted to share with you guys a resource that we have, a kick-ass program called the 100K Contractor. Guys, this program is designed to do just that. It's to get you as a contractor business owner to at least $100,000 a year in personal income. All right, so I want to just share this domain with you guys, because listen, at the end of the day, you deserve it. Your family deserves it. It's time we quit stealing from our families. We've got a lot of cool stuff inside the 100K Contractor. So if you go to thecontractorfight.com/100K-contractor, you can see what we got going on. We've got a couple of videos where things get explained and get you guys set up on the right path toward your 100K personal income. You guys rock. One of the biggest fears that people have in general is the fear of the outsider. Okay. That's why, you know, you go to the jungles in the middle of somewhere in the world, they put your head on a stick, right? Cause you're the outsider. And yeah. So that's why in a lot of companies, when they hire a new guy, I used to see this a lot. We'd hire a guy who could paint really well, had, you know, was a good dude and all this other stuff. And it was funny. Some of the guys in our company over the next couple of weeks would start going, yeah, I don't like this new guy. You know what I mean? And basically yep. What was happening is their lack of production or attitude and all that other stuff was being exposed. And so, you know, nobody wants to lose their position on the team necessarily. And so there's this fear of the outsider. And then the outsider coming in is, you know, his new group, that they're also outsiders to him. And so it's like, am I going to be accepted? And so anyway, this fear that we all have to some degree creates the need for building community, you know, and unifying people. So what are some of the things that you've seen as an employee that have been really good to kind of knock some of those barriers down where there might be a little bit of like, I'm not saying this guy that took you under his wing was like threatened that he was going to lose his job or anything. But sometimes people are very protective. And I'm just curious, I know I'm putting you on the spot here, you know, some of these larger companies that, you know, they have training budgets and they have, you know, maybe they're, it's some sort of weekly, you know, check-in or meeting or, you know, social activities. I'm just curious, what have you seen that has had a, that have built that community or have made you feel like you're part of the family when you've started with somebody?
I have a couple things here. The first thing is, for whatever reason, this organization I work for now, I feel like I'm putting on my jersey, and every day when I get up, I'm going out and we're going to crush it. Like, for whatever reason, they have that culture. And I think part of what it is they've just hired, they've done a really good job at recruiting A players. And the A players are also very collaborative A players. They like the team environment. One of the things that was said to me right off the bat that really helped ease me into my position was, at the end of the day, we're all here for one job. That job is to deliver this project safely, on time, and on budget for our clients. And whatever happens along the way, it's not personal, it's business. We have a job to do here. So first of all, don't take anything we say personally, because our objective, no matter how it's delivered between us, is to get this done. So if we're going to work together on this job, let's first and foremost, it's not personal, it's business. The second thing I think as well is really to break those barriers down is to socialize the people in your organization together. And that was the thing that happened to me right away, is what I've seen worked really well was I was brought into this organization. And although they had the position of PM in mind for me at the time, they said, you're not starting on a job. We're starting you in the office. And what you're going to do is you're going to spend time here getting to know everybody that's going to support you in the field. Mm-hmm. Who does AP? Who does AR? Who does the billing? Who does the procurement? Who's estimating? Who's in HR? Who do you need to talk to? Who are the project directors? Who are the VPs? Who's the CEO? And what is their contact information? So that when we say go and you're out in the field and you need support from the office, you've put a face to a name. You understand who everybody is. You understand what the culture's like here. You're not lost. You're not looking for contact information. Mm-hmm. And they also started me off in estimating, which was pretty awesome. They said, here's the software we use. We want you to learn how we bid, how we price, what type of margins we're putting on our projects, what general contractors we actually work with and why we work with them and why we like them, who we turn down and don't have a good relationship with and why. And that is going to give you more tools along with the socialization of meeting everybody. You're going to understand how we price these jobs. So then when you go to manage it and your pricing changes and you're doing all this stuff and you're getting handed an estimate saying now it's time to turn that into a profitable project, you understand the rationale behind how these people came up with the numbers. So they started me off a little bit in the office, and then they said, we're going to give you this runway until it's go time. Then we're going to push you in with a mentor and he's going to take you the rest of the way. And then when we feel that you've reached your pinnacle of mentorship, then we're going to bring you onto a job and throw a coordinator underneath you, and you're going to do the same thing for that person. So I think just that inclusion and having that culture, just everybody's included. We're all here for one common goal and we're all on the same team and that's it. There is no, you know, pushing people aside because there's a VP position available, right, a director role. It's like, we're all here. We're one of the largest organizations. We don't need to fight each other. You've been hand selected to be in this company. You're all cut from the same cloth. That's why you're here. So go figure out your personal stuff and get the job done. And then you're able to, for whatever reason, it works.
Yeah. You know, when I work with people and we get into the topic of like job descriptions and stuff, I always tell, and job description is one thing, it's on paper, but you got to live the shit out, right? You can't just let it sit on paper. So, but like, you got to start with, and so many people don't do this, I don't care what the position in the company is, I think there should be a section of the job description that basically, the title on mine is, when we give a template out, is how this position contributes to the success of the company.
Right.
Like, I want everybody to know, because it's like, I keep going to football analogies because, you know, I've been a coach for so long, but like when we teach a play or a concept, we teach the context of it. Like, we're like, this is what we're trying to accomplish. We're you know, not that you have to be able to perform everyone else's job, but you have to know, you know, why, you know, what the O-line is trying to do here, you know, and the O-line needs to be taught, you know, where the eyes of the running back are going to and some things like that, just so everybody has a big picture of what we're trying to achieve. And that's what I'm hearing by you spending time with everybody. You're learning, like, you know, you're not going to be able to kick ass in your job unless you have the support of these other people.
That's right.
And a lot of times, and the other thing that this is spelling out here also is, they have a plan for a new hire. So like so many businesses, I mean, I've done this, like, you know, and I certainly wasn't a business as big as the one you're talking about now, or that you work for, but it was, like a guy would show up to the shop or the office and I'd go, oh shit, he's starting today. You know what I mean? And then you're like winging it. And so many of us don't have success with employees and can't train and retain them because we just don't have a plan right out of the gate of what that first day is going to look like. What's the first week? What's the first month? And how are we going to know they're going to good fit? How are they going to know that they're doing a good job and all this other stuff? And it takes a special commitment to be able to bring people on and make them feel like they're part of things, but also set them up for success. So,
one last thing that I actually learned from a company that I interviewed yesterday, which I thought was quite awesome. And it's kind of to fall in line with your coaching references. They keep a virtual bench. And what that means is at any given time, they've got five or six people from other companies or other areas of the industry that they have their eyes on that they're socializing with. Come to our company events, come to the office, come drop by, come to our job site, see how we're doing things, come meet the team, come meet us for coffee, let's go for dinner. And then when that person's ready to make the switch, the whole team knows them already. They're not pressured into leaving one organization and coming to the next. And then they're brought right off the bench and plugged into the organization. They know the whole org chart. They know everybody in it, and it's over. Like, they're in.
I love that. That's good shit, man. All right. So as we wrap up here, you send me some of these other bullet points. What you get to close out with anything you want here, man. What do you want to leave, you know, our listeners with here before we wrap up and share some of your contact info and stuff like that?
So obviously I beat the drum pretty hard about getting interested in skilled trades and being a leader within your organization and within the construction industry. So I think to just summarize it quick is explore skilled trades, you know, explore debt-free education. I think it's very important if you are in a position, if you're fortunate enough to be in a position where you are more senior than somebody else, or you happen to be like yourself, Tom, or like me that has a podcast, I think that it is your duty to become a leader and somebody that others can look up to get inspired about why a career in construction is so awesome. And I don't want to hear any more excuses out of anybody's mouth that's going out and handing out resumes that they can't get a job. I don't think you're doing a good enough job. There is such a crazy labor shortage. If I hear another apprentice come to me and say, well, I handed my resume out to six companies and nobody called me back, that's not enough. You need to hand it out to 600. You need to be knocking down doors, not taking no for an answer, and you need to come prepared. Don't show up in a suit to a construction interview. What you got to do is you got to show up with everything you need. Look, I got my cars out front. It's licensed. I got no tickets. I have my license. I have my tools in the back. I work hard. I want the OT. I'm ready to go. Let's go. None of this, oh, what do I need? Like, you got it. You got to show up ready for these companies because the basics are the same for everybody. Do you have reliable transportation? Are you going to show up on time? Are you going to work hard? Are you going to accept the OT? And do you have your tools? If you have those things and you can prove it, you will get a job a lot quicker. So I think don't take no for an answer. And if you can't find work in your city or your province or your state, then maybe you've got to take that leap of faith and go somewhere else. But the opportunity is there. And I think you just got to go after it. Just get after that opportunity. And so many amazing things will happen in your life.
Well, you and I both know that as a company owner, that's one of the biggest struggles they're dealing with right now is finding people.
Yeah.
And I hear from the company owners all the time, oh, there's no good people out here. There's no good people. And I think it's two parts here. The first part is if you own a company and you're having a hard time finding people, you got to look at your own leadership, first of all. What kind of culture are you creating? I think the second thing you got to look at is, am I branding my business? I always talk about the more you, like, do you think Starbucks has a hard time finding employees? Fuck no.
No.
Apple doesn't have a hard time finding employees. No. Okay. So brand your business to be the type of place that's visible, that's, you know, that everybody in your trade or whatever it is knows that you're a player. And if that means you're running ads to guys that are in the carpentry trade because you're a remodeler or whatever, and you're running, they're seeing your ads on, and not even hiring ads, but just ads in general, just so you're on the radar. So build your brand so that there's more eyeballs on you. But then create the type of culture, like we touched on a minute ago, that people want to be a part of, where people are knocking on your door. And that happens when you, when you're taking care of your employees, you have your shit together, your employees are going to talk. And word's going to get around that you're the type of place, you know. So you kind of called out those looking for a job. Don't take no for an answer. I'm calling out the business owners going, there's plenty of people that are out there that would be amazing additions to your team. You're just not sending the message that you're a business that's worth a shit for them to give their attention to.
Seriously. Straight up. Like
I,
yep.
I mean, it's that simple. I work with a lot of people. And one of the questions I always ask is, would you want to work for you? You know, and most people, when they're honest, they go, no. And I go, well, no. Why not? And they're like, well, I don't have consistent work. I don't have a career path for people. I don't have any, whatever benefits are important to other people. I, you know, on and on and on and on. You know, we talked about the fear of the outsider. Another fear that people have is a fear of chaos, and which creates a need for order. So if you have a business that's more chaotic than orderly, people are not going to want to be a part of it. Or at some point, they're going to leave. They're not going to just stay because you're paying them more money, because it's going to drive them crazy at some point with all the chaos. So
that's
anyway,
it.
I don't want to vamp too much on that. But well, Colin, how do if somebody wants to poach you from your current company? no, I'm just getting there.
Well, you can send happened. All offers to Colin@toolspodcast.com.
There you go. yeah. And where can we find you if they want to check out your show and other resources that you have for people?
Yeah. So toolspodcast.com is the website where we have all of our episodes, show notes, blog posts, everything's going on there. My contact information's there. It really depends on which way you want to get in touch with me. If you want to just talk about construction and shoot the shit, you can reach me at Colin@toolspodcast.com. If you want to see what I'm up to more professionally, I'm very active on LinkedIn. And obviously Instagram. I have a lot of really unique guests coming on the podcast over the next few months, and I'm accepting questions from you guys. So if there's anything you want to ask somebody, check out my story every week. I'm posting on there who's coming on the podcast next. Fire your questions. We'll get them answered so that we can give you the answers you want to set your career in construction on fire. And that's where you can get at me. And Tom, man, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad we made this happen, man. And, I look forward to watching you continue to kick some serious ass and help
you as well.
Industry and help other people build their careers and stuff like that, man. So, all right, everybody, make sure you hit the show notes. Check out Colin's stuff. With that, Travis, bring in the guitars, and Colin, we'll talk to you next time, man.
Cheers. Thanks, everybody.
Want some fight swag to wear? Simply share this episode of The Contractor Fight anywhere on Facebook or Instagram using the hashtag #JoinTheFight. And our team will pick one winner each week to recognize your help in spreading the fight message.